particularly I'm thinking about the issue of the impasse. This impasse, as you said, which we are going through at present, and this special kind of barbarism, and in that second quotation you read from The Life Divine, it seemed to me that Sri Aurobindo is pointing to two possibilities of barbarism. One which seems more like hedonistic barbarism, and the other more serious, because he calls it a comfortable condition without any idealism. Now, this comfortable condition without any idealism, where the aspiration disappears because man is happy with his material state, sort of like the ideal of Russian socialism, which in a different way is coming to us today in our modern world. It seems as if there is a certain kind of satisfaction with life and what it can give. Do you think that this can last as a condition in which humanity becomes typified, as he says, with a type of perfection? Or is it inevitable that the aspiration from within will force us out of it?
Well, I think I will repeat your question to some extent. Please tell me if I have understood your question properly. Your question is that Sri Aurobindo refers to two alternative possibilities. One is reversal of mankind, in which mankind would revert to a comfortable hedonistic life.
Yes.
And if that happens, maybe that there will be a sinking of mankind and a kind of a failure of mankind on account of the reversal of mankind to that condition. The other possibility is that even if mankind does not sink, even if mankind is not destroyed as a race, another possibility would be to create a civilization or a barbaric civilization in which human beings would find a tolerable, comfortable, mechanical, facilitated existence. Somewhere where people get clothing, shelter, and basic necessities of life quite easily and in sufficient measure. And therefore people would remain like animals chewing their guts, as it were, and watching the world and engage in cinema and drama and all kinds of pleasures of life, and doing some work here, some work there, and flying from one place to the other, and spending time, and in which case it will be a kind of typical economic life established on the earth. And I think this is your second hypothesis, and I think that's your question, is it? Now,
yes,
I think that both the
alternatives. Yes. I see that second hypothesis as something which is very close to realization in a very large section of humanity today, giving them a certain kind of, a satisfied life, in which there is no aspiration, no idealism.
Well, I think what you are saying, let me repeat also once again. You feel that the second possibility of arrival of a typical human life, economically satisfied and flourishing in comfort, without the urge, evolutionary urge to go beyond, You feel that we are now almost nearing that kind of existence. Your question is whether I share that feeling. Is that so? Hello?
Yes, Kirita. Yes.
This is your question. Yes? Now my answer is
yes,
the following.
Yes.
My answer is the following. I only like to share with you my own feeling that,
of course, yes.
This possibility, I agree with you, is looming large. If, for example, there had to be a constant conflict between communism and capitalism, which was very much on the top of the agenda of the world at one time, if that conflict had remained, there was a tremendous impetus for an evolutionary earth to move forward. But we see that that situation is no more there, and there is a further development. Some people now speak of super capitalism coming over the earth and spreading over the whole earth, in which the conflict between communism and socialism on one side and capitalism on the other would not be there. So there is no combat, and there is therefore no quarrel on that basis. It is a kind of a comfortable condition for a capitalistic order of society in which something of socialism is assimilated, namely the ideal that everyone should get basic necessities of life. I think we are arriving at a point where socialism loses its edge because capitalism is able to provide to a large or increasing number of people the basic necessities of life, even within the capitalistic frame of society. And if this is multiplied, let us say within 20, 30, 40 years, there is this possibility. And it might actually lead to the cessation of the evolutionary urge in mankind. Fortunately, I think because Mother and Shrivindo race already high, and they have brought into the world new forces, I believe that it will no more be actualized. Although I would agree that we are almost arriving at that point, but I think something new is going to happen. And it is that which we have to consider also during the course of our journey. What is that that will allow a new development which will not allow mankind to rest comfortably only in a typal existence of economic, social, comfortable life. Would you like to say something on this subject?
Thank you, Kiritbhai. No, I completely agree with you. I was just listening. So that's
yes.
Answers your question. One thing of says that though this is the case, there is other kinds of conflicts that have also arisen, particularly those of an infra-rational kind with fundamentalism and terrorism and things of that nature. It is as if rationality is being attacked in its comfort zone by infrarational forces as well at this point, and they also crack up for the kinds of solutions. But this is restricted to certain areas of the world, and there are large areas where people are still very comfortable in their, existence of material sufficiency. But I 100% agree with you and look forward to what you have over time regarding the other forces that Mother and Sri Aurobindo have brought. Would anybody else like to ask any questions at this point?
Yes.
Question is that, is there anything that we could do, or as a physical action, in all different countries, whoever or wherever, to fight against this apparent comfort and apparent unity in comfort. The very reason is coming from the mind, which can play in either way. Like Mother says that mind can prove anything. So, we can convince ourselves about anything. So, and find some kind of unity in this comfortable community, which is largely found in corporate world in United States, for example. So, of course, there are forces that are working because Mother and Sri Aurobindo have done their yoga. But as individuals, what is the, with this source, can be suggested to be done to contribute anything against this force?
Well, I like your question very much, I must say. And although your question is, in a sense, limited, which can be summarized by saying, what is it that we can do at this stage of development? And this question triggers off a number of things that to one's own mind. The most important thing to my mind is to develop in the world spiritual education. You know, there is a line of thinking according to which we are called upon to do many things, not only one thing. So if I say we should concentrate on spiritual education, it may seem as if I am proposing only one thing to be done. But if you examine this answer more properly, you'll find that this answer, spiritual education, implies a number of things to be done socially, politically, economically, culturally. And therefore, for the time being, I would only say in a general formula, let us concentrate upon the task of spiritual education in the world. If we can succeed in doing it, we shall have crossed a number of problems and resolved them. So, in due course of time, I would like to discuss with all of us this theme of spiritual education. Because the moment you speak of spiritual education, a number of objections are bound to arise. And to answer those questions, many questions concerning political life will have to be answered. Many questions of social life will have to be answered. So, for the moment, I just leave it with you only one line. The one thing that we can all participate in is the development of spiritual education.
Is it possible for you to illustrate it more, like to be specific about, like by an example?
Let me say only one line. Spiritual education implies the creation of learning society. I don't know if you are aware of, or you must have read perhaps, this great report of UNESCO of 1971, You know, there are two great reports of UNESCO. One is a report which was given under the direction of Edgar Faure, under the title Learning to Be. And another was in 1995, which is entitled Learning Treasure Within. These are the two great reports of UNESCO. I like both of them, but I like the first one better because it speaks of creating in the world learning society. And to my mind, that phrase, learning society, summarizes the problem of the world today. Learning society is one in which the center of the society is a child. It is not only child-centered education. It is not child-centered class. It's a child-centered society. If you want spiritual education to be realized, it is not enough merely to make child the center of a class. It is necessary to make the child center of the whole society. That is to say, the child should be the sovereign of the society. And that brings a complete shift from the present mode of our social existence. Today, in the economic life, we speak of the sovereignty of the consumer. Not the child, the consumer is a sovereign. And everything in the world is at the service of the consumer. Some other people speak today of the necessity of sustaining society by political organization. And large number of people have come to realize that democratic form of government is perhaps the most suitable form of the government if you want to meet the ends of liberty and so on. And therefore, they speak of creating a society which is democratic. And if you ask the question, what is a sovereign in a democratic country? The answer is sovereignty of the parliament. So if you want to sum up in a way the entire social economic existence of modern world, and even the future perspective, if you look at the world, you might say that we are going to increase more and more the sovereignty of the consumer and the sovereignty of the parliament. But if you want to give spiritual education, then we have to establish in the world sovereignty of the child. Now you can see that this one example which I am giving you will show you the enormous implication of the sovereignty of the child and spiritual education for shifting the whole center of social existence, political existence, economic existence. You think it's a good example?
Yes, very much. Thank you. One thing I was still curious that, you know, sometimes it is said that, you know, a divine has to see you. You cannot see the divine before that. So since the spiritual education is based on experience, so are you hopeful that with the child spiritual education amongst the children will really make a big difference, which is enough to fight this huge capitalist world?
It's a very, very good question. Your question is whether spiritual education will provide to the children sufficient power and capacity to fight against the present mode of life, economic, social, political life. My answer is, that the very doing of spiritual education, the very process by which we shall be able to bring about the operation of spiritual education in the society, will combat many, many problems which are today besieging the mankind. So I believe that if you see the implications of spiritual education and the process by which you can bring it about, I think at least for you and for me, this is a big task awaiting us. And if you start doing it, many tasks will unfold themselves.